from the Duck South Studios in Morgan City, Mississippi.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
I want to punch you in the face so bad right now.
This is the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
Get the governor a harumph.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Today's episode is brought to you by Advantage Multi from Bayer. Advantage Multi is veterinarians' number one choice in the prevention of heartworms, fleas, roundworms, hookworms, and whipworms. Treats and controls sarcoptic mange. Make sure your dog is protected by using Advantage Multi.
I said what I said and I'll stand by it to the death.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
And now, here are your hosts, J. Paul Jackson.
You just love to hear yourself talk, don't you? Even when you're not saying anything.
Rocky LaFleur.
Yo, Adrian! Adrian!
Houston Kennedy.
Please, Houston, we have a problem.
And Josh Webb.
Coons! Well, raccoon's trying to get on our back porch. Mama just chased him off with a broom.
Welcome to the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com. Hey, I'm J. Paul Jackson. I'll be with you as your host today, along with my other host, Rocky LaFleur. Rocky, you here with me, brother?
Yes, sir. Glad to be back after our couple-of-day break from Labor Day.
I'm telling you, man, I went through withdrawals over the Labor Day holiday weekend not getting to do this.
I know. You called me.
I mean, about 20 times.
Yeah.
I can't believe all that begging and you still wouldn't give in and let us do one on Sunday.
Well, I figured we would have a hard time trying to find a guest for that Sunday one, being that Labor Day was the next day. So I think it worked out well. Everybody got a break. Everybody got to dove hunt. Did you go dove hunt?
No, I did not. I did not. I spent the Labor Day weekend in Orange Beach, Alabama. Unfortunately, I was down there on business, so it wasn't all fun. But I have not loaded my shotgun yet. But I plan this weekend to rectify that. As a matter of fact, I'm probably going to head down to Morgan City, Mississippi, where we can do our Sunday podcast right there in your studios.
That sounds great to me. The only thing is, man, we put a hurting on our dove population in our field. We had a awesome hunt on Saturday. But I will tell you this, most of the birds we killed were smaller birds, so that tells me that they're local birds. They were really small doves, looked like they just came out of a nest. So that tells me we're killing local birds. But, you know, they're talking about a big cold front next week. I mean, they're talking about temperatures dropping to the low 80s. Have you seen that for next week?
Yeah, I was looking at the weather this morning because right now we've got a heat index here of like 103, and it's made it really, really tough on the dogs. And, you know, I've been thinking about turning and heading back north again for a week or two, but then it looks like Sunday it's going to start to get really pleasant down here. And, you know, you've got all those juvenile birds. Of course, doves are migratory. So I think that the adults, from all the reports that I've been getting, it has been a lot of juveniles, a lot of local birds being killed. I think the biggest migration is yet to come, and that cold snap, I think, is going to push those, and hopefully it's going to push the blue-winged teal. And I'm really excited today about this podcast, speaking of blue-winged teal, because later on, here in about 15 minutes, we're going to be joined by Blake Swallow of Full Strap and Stringer Guide Service out of Pineville, Louisiana. And Blake really knows blue-winged teal, so I want to talk about that a little bit with him. But first, I want to remind everybody that this part of the podcast is brought to you by Hardcore Brands and Hardcore Decoys. Now, at Hardcore, they make the best, most durable, and most innovative waterfowling products out there for the hardcore duck and goose hunter. And we're really proud to be associated with Hardcore because we know it's not easy being hardcore.
J. Paul, the thing that comes along with dove hunting is what this past weekend? What are the two things that everybody gets excited about on Labor Day weekend? It's usually the opening of dove season and the opening of
blue-winged teal season and duck season being just around the corner.
No, I was going to say college football.
I'm there with you, brother. I'm thinking hunting, but hey, I get excited about college football. And was it craziest opening weekend you've ever seen?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to ever turn this into a sports podcast, but I know most of the guys that are listening to this, I know they were in front of a TV watching some of these games this weekend. Well, did you watch any of the games?
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, between driving and listening to them on XM radio and then getting in front of the TV as soon as I got home, I listened to the Houston-Oklahoma game, which the outcome of that absolutely delighted me. The Alabama game gets USC.
Hey,
which
talking about that game, and I know Houston's not with us today, and I know he can't stand up for his Tide, but is Alabama really that good, or is USC really that bad?
No, man, I think Alabama's the real deal this year. I mean, you know, and being, of course, a Rebel fan, I hate it. I can't wait for us to kick their butt here in a week and a half down in Oxford. And I fully expect that we can, but I believe that the Tide's the real deal. I'll tell you, the most impressive thing about that game to me, Rocky, you know, I actually sent Houston a text during the first half and said, man, your boys are off to a rocky start. USC jumped out ahead 3-0 right off the bat. You know, they may be in trouble. It wasn't looking good. And then Hurst comes in his first play as a starter in college and fumbles the football and turns it over. But I'll tell you what impressed me. That young man, true freshman, you know, highly rated. Everybody's expecting good things out of him, and he delivered. I mean, he recovered from that opening play of his career turnover and rushed for a touchdown later in the game, threw for a touchdown, had two or three big plays that he absolutely made happen. He can run. He can throw. The Alabama defense was stingy. I think they're the real deal. I believe that, you know, they just reloaded the gun, and they're coming back. And that was
The only reason I would disagree with that, if you could have seen that game live, those linemen for USC, the offensive linemen, man, they just looked out of shape and fat. I mean, and I know Alabama's defense is good, but man, USC just looked fat. Their offensive line just looked fat and out of shape playing that game.
Well, you know, I did come back and I'd actually recorded the game, so I watched a good chunk of it also after listening to it. And that, man, take a look at offensive lines across the country. I mean, that's just the trend. And there are a lot of 300-pound guys who have, you know, 40-yard times that 30, 40 years ago would have been a fullback's time. So, you know, yeah, these guys, you know, they look overweight, but there's a lot of athleticism there. And then you've got just the sheer quickness of the Alabama defensive front. I think they did make them look bad. I'll be very interested to see, you know, what they look like when they come down to Oxford here. I know we both got tickets to that game. I plan on sitting with you and watching it. But I don't know. I really felt like Alabama was the real deal. And I felt like Hurst, that freshman quarterback, was the real deal. I was really surprised.
I'll tell you, I was kind of disappointed. Go through this real quick. I was kind of disappointed in Mississippi State. That should have been a Mississippi State's a lot better team than that, and to lose to South Alabama. And I'm not going to dig at them because, you know what? I know what it feels like. I was sitting in the stands in 2010 when Ole Miss lost to Jacksonville State. So I am definitely not going to take a shot at the State fans about losing to South Alabama because I know what that feels like. It hurts. It hurts to see the team that you love lose to a Little League team. So I'm not going
to
take a shot.
It hurt me to watch it. You know, I mean, again, I'm an SEC fan when they're playing anybody but Ole Miss or Mizzou. You know, my two SEC favorites. If Mississippi State, if Alabama, if Florida, if South Carolina is playing someone outside the SEC, I'm probably rooting for the SEC team. So it hurt me to see that. But the biggest hurt for me, and I want to hear your comments, and then I want to move on out of sports and into duck hunting. The biggest hurt for me was watching our Rebels fall the way that they did. I mean, I just felt like at halftime, we had that game, and we just gave it away in the second half. What are your thoughts, Rocky?
There's two problems with Ole Miss right now. One, they've got to be able to run the football, and not for the sense of what most people would say they have to run the football, but they have to run the football to slow the game down. They got to keep that defense off the field, because Ole Miss's defense by the third and fourth quarter, they were just worn out. The other thing was on the defense, if you watch that game, the cornerbacks were giving those guys a 10 or 15 yard cushion to for Francois to complete those little 10 yard passes. And some of them were longer, but you know, if you jam those receivers at the line of scrimmage, because our defensive line was in the backfield all night long. So if you jam those receivers, it disrupts the timing and it gives your defensive lineman more time to get in the backfield to make the sack, to make the play. And I don't understand that why our cornerbacks are giving them a 10-yard cushion. So I think that's the two main reasons Ole Miss lost that game. They wore the defense out by not running the ball and slowing the game down, and they just gave the Florida State's wide receivers just too much of a cushion.
Yeah, and I'd agree with that. I think that, you know, our Landshark defense is a lot better than they looked against Francois. And I think that Kelly, you know, the thing that he's really played a great game except for those two interceptions. And, you know, those the turnovers, I think, were a really, really big deal for us too. But I tell you, it was a heartbreaker. I'm ready to move on. And I'm welcoming week two, you know, and watching some of these teams that I think are better than they showed this weekend have the chance to reload and rejuvenate and maybe settle into a groove, because some of the powerhouse teams out there, you know, Alabama started slow, finished strong. Michigan, oh my goodness. I tell you, that Michigan team looked fantastic. You know, there are some teams that showed Houston that they're going to be the real deal, and there are some that I'm hoping just stumbled out of the gate and are going to come back strong. And certainly our Rebels are one of those. But
all right, I've got a question. Changing the subject. Listen, you've been a TV personality, somebody that has been seen in the public eye. Let me ask you a crazy question. Do you get, and I know you do, but a lot of crazy friend requests?
Oh my gosh.
On Facebook?
Man, yeah.
Ever since this podcast started going out and it started getting shared by different people, you know, I've started getting all these wild friend requests. And I don't mind the friend request, especially I'll befriend anybody that has something dead in their profile picture. I don't mind taking those friend requests. But the thing is, here's the thing that bothers me, is a lot of these people that I've accepted their friend request, within 30 minutes of me accepting their friend request, they're asking me to like a page. I'm like, let's get to know each other just a little bit before we make it that far, before we go that far. Do you get those friend requests on Facebook?
First off, before we even go to there, let's get to know each other a little bit before we go that far. We're talking about social media and Facebook, Rocky. We're not talking about dating. I mean, I'm pretty sure that before I became a married man, I heard two or three women, actually several, say those exact words to me. But no, I do understand what you're saying. I get friend requests from people I don't know all the time. And I'm pretty picky, because I think today I can take on my personal page, now on my public figure page, you know, Trainer J. Paul Jackson, you know, it's unlimited with followers. But on my personal page, I'm like three people away from being at my max. So I'm pretty picky. But I'll tell you this, I have had a lot of requests since we started this with people that I thought, okay, this person's legitimate. And I'm sure they are. And then I come on and they do exactly what you said. You know, they ask me to share something, or they share something on my page that I don't want there. And that is the quickest way for me to can somebody to make room for somebody else. So yeah, I get loads of those. Speaking of friends, we are about to be joined with my friend Blake Swallow of Full Strap and Stringer Guide Service down in Louisiana. But before he joins us, I want to remind everybody that our podcast every week is made possible thanks to Bear Animal Health and Advantage Multi. And there are a lot of options out there for heartworm prevention on the market, but there's only one, particularly here in the Mississippi Valley where we live and we have resistant forms of heartworm. Heartworms that are resistant to the traditional monthly preventatives. There's only one that is 100% effective, and that is Advantage Multi from Bear Animal Health. And now I think that I just heard my buddy Blake join in. How you doing, brother?
Good morning, Jay Paul.
Good to have you on here.
Oh, everything's good. Just getting a little closer to teal season down here. Doesn't feel like it. Still pretty warm, but we're looking forward to Saturday as our opening day.
Wow, it opens this Saturday.
Yep, sure does. Saturday morning. We have a 16-day season. It opens, starts this weekend and goes almost to the end of the month.
Well, tell me, I know you've been scouting. What's it looking like?
We're a little early in the migration here. There are some pockets of birds within the state. I just came back from South Louisiana this morning looking at some of our fields along the coast. And there are some birds. They're very, very concentrated. They're not spread out. And but it'll pick up over the next 2 weeks, and opening day is always a good shoot. After that, it'll depend on where you are, but we're a little early in the migration from what I'm hearing from the guys in Nebraska and Iowa that are still seeing ponds full of teal.
Blake, this is Rocky. I appreciate you joining us on the X podcast powered by Duck South. Blake, I got a question for you. I want to pretend like I am going on my first teal hunt ever. What are some helpful hints from a professional like yourself that you could give to a beginner like me that has never teal hunted before, and I plan on going this weekend, but I am a duck hunter. What are some hints and some strategies to be able to kill more teal?
Well, first thing I would always recommend is you call your outfitter a few days before. You find out from them, depending on their geographical location and what kind of fields you're going to be hunting in, if it's, you know, depending on what your surroundings are going to be, to find out from him what he thinks you, you know, what size shot you may be needing, and if the birds are going to be in the fields and what kind of attire to wear. A lot of people in teal season, they come out with big sets of waders, and of course, I'm down south, so, I mean, we're going to be shooting birds in 85 and 90 weather this Saturday, so you want to dress comfortably. You want to make sure you have some kind of very, very, very good insect repellent. I would recommend that, you know, people ask me all the time, say, well, Blake, what kind of shot should I shoot? What shoot what you're comfortable shooting. Don't come and start something new. Don't buy two boxes of new shells, a new shot, or something that you haven't shot in your gun before just because you're going to go shooting teals. I mean, a teal's a duck. It's a smaller duck, but pretty much with your gun patterns well at where you're shooting mallards in the woods, it's pretty much the same thing you can shoot on teal. You may want to downsize if you're a BB or a two-man to a four or a six, but don't do anything real drastic. Some very good friends of mine, we shoot twos all year long. It doesn't matter what kind of bird we shoot. It's just that's what our guns are patterned for, and that's what our chokes are specified for. So, but one of the main things, another one of the things I would say to do is just be very open-minded and listen to whomever you're going with. If it's your first trip, obviously, the person you're going with, you have some kind of trust or understanding that they know what they're doing. So if they lead you in a certain direction, try to go that way and be open-minded about the whole day.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I'd like to comment on that, too, because I've hunted all over the country with loads of different outfitters. And, of course, I've hunted several times with you, Blake, and always had a great time doing it. But, you know, I would say for the guy that's new at it, don't guide the guide. I mean, if you've booked with that person and you trust them, man, just sit back, listen to them, and, you know, do what they do. But don't guide the guide. Hey, and Blake, I want to ask you about something. You mentioned, you know, being warm and hunting down there in Louisiana. What do you think about thermocells?
Love thermocells. Thermocells are a wonderful thing here. I mean, if you hunt early season doves, duck, teal, if you're a squirrel hunter, if you're a bow hunter, and you're in Louisiana, in the Mississippi area where we hunt, it's a mainstay. When you don't have it in the morning, you feel like you've forgotten something very, very important, and it doesn't take long for you to doesn't take long for you to learn that lesson, and you put it out right there on top of your pants next morning before you even get dressed. Make sure you don't forget it. It's a great product. We really use them a lot.
Yeah, and you know, we're not sponsored by Thermacell or anything like that. I just was talking to some guys the other day, and they were talking about, you know, they'd been out scouting looking for blue wings, and they'd sat watching for a few minutes. The mosquitoes had been on them. And I remember a few years ago I was introduced to Thermacell on a teal hunt down there in Louisiana. And, man, if you don't know about them, for our listeners, particularly here in the South that have never used them, check out Thermacell. It's a tremendous alternative to mosquito spray or repellent. And definitely something, if you're going in the marsh for blue wing teal here during September, it'd be my best advice to a newbie.
Absolutely.
Hey, Blake.
100%. Yes.
Hey, Blake, I got a couple of questions for you. I'm back to the beginner. I've never been blue wing teal hunting. I have a two-part question for you. One, how much do you change your shooting technique to shoot teal versus regular ducks? And then once you give that answer, I'll follow up with my next one.
Well, I mean, to answer you, the question is that different people have different techniques, but I've always been a follow-through man. You have snap shooting fellows that snap shoot. You have people that follow through on their birds, make sure the swing goes through. I wouldn't say change a whole lot. Just get on your bird and swing through him. A lot of people say, well, how do you know you're swinging through? And what I did is, I have two sons, and I taught them, and my father taught me the same way. If you're wondering if you're swinging through or not, when you pull the trigger, just in your mind, wonder, just always anticipate a miss. If you always anticipate a miss, then you're going to stay on that bird for the second shot, and that'll keep you swinging through. But the main thing for me on the technique is to keep swinging through your bird no matter what time of the year you're shooting it.
Yeah, that is an important shooting technique for dove hunting, duck hunting, any kind of wing shooting. It's just, you know, keep that gun on the bird, or keep the lead out there. But the other part to my question is, I'm the new guy. I want to know about teal. So what would you recommend as far as calling? You know, I know that you probably don't have a call in your truck with you, but what calling techniques are we trying to use to call in a teal, a blue wing teal? What, I mean, kind of, if you can make it with your mouth, I mean, what does it sound like?
Well, as a matter of fact, I don't know if Jay Paul's told you or not, a lot of the calling that we do down here for the blue wing teal is with our mouth. There are a lot of different call manufacturers that make a very good blue wing teal call, but it's just a short little raspy, and, you know, just something like that. And we use our mouths here a lot because that's just what we grew up doing and hunting on these fields, and it seems to work. But, you know, there's different calls for the application, but there's many different call makers that make a blue wing teal call. And look, some days they want to be called at a lot. Jay Paul will tell you that. And then some days they do not want to be called at very much. Just turn them in one. Once the wings kind of pitch head your way, get off of them. And the later in the season as it goes, it seems like less calling is a better thing.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. I mean, you know, we've seen, even with the blue wings down there in Louisiana hunting with you, when you move through that 15-day season, by the end of it, you better be letting your decoys and your concealment do the work. I mean, I've been on shoots down there that, you know, in the first week that were like a dove hunt where you could just sit wide out, right out in the wide open, and then, you know, later on as it moved on and the birds get a little bit more still, they react just like any other duck out there does. And speaking of calling, you know, Blake, I've listened to you do it, and Blake does, guys, an excellent job of mouth calling and actually turning blue wing teal, and it's almost like a little raspy laugh when I've heard you do it in the past.
Right. And, you know, Jay Paul, what a lot of people have forgotten, folks come down and hunted with us for years, and they're starting to see the last 3 or 4 years, a few of the comments, well, we don't have as many teal, or it seems like the teal are a little bit more gun-shy now than they used to be. But what happened about 3 or 4 years ago, as you know, most of the northern states didn't have a teal season. Well, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service decided 3 or 4 or 5 years ago to start giving the northern states a teal season. Well, it's good in one way because it does get them moving south. But in another way, they have a little bit of education that comes along with them. I mean, it used to be a few would get down to the Arkansas, Texas, Mississippi area, Tennessee, where there was a southern summer duck season, and they were, you know, they hadn't been educated yet. Now they've been hunted, you know, some of the northern states that started this past weekend. So it's different. There, mm-hmm. things are changing, and you got to kind of change your tactics on the birds a little bit.
Yeah, and I tell you, I think that they're going to have to really take a good look at that, too, and try to figure out what kind of impact that that's having on the teal population. Because this year, when they released the counts late this summer, blue wings were still well above the long-term average. But the blue wing teal population decreased from just over 8 million to, I believe, just under 7 million birds, which was a pretty significant dip. And I'll be interested in learning how much of that is attributed to particularly the juveniles in the population, you know, which are impacted greatest by hunting in the north. How much of that is from hunting pressure? Because up until this year, blue wings have been second only to mallards in abundance, but there's still loads of them. I don't want to, you know, scare people. I mean, if you take a look at the long-term average, they're still way, way above it. And you guys down there have to have some of the best teal hunting that I've ever seen. I tell you, I would encourage anybody out there listening, if you haven't done blue wing teal hunting and you want to do it, you need to get in touch with Blake. Blake Swallow, Full Strap and Stringer Guide Service. Blake, I know you've got both a website and a Facebook page. Is that right?
That's correct. And go to our Facebook page or to our website. They can see a little bit about us and what we have to offer. And if they need to talk to me directly, they can call me at 318-730-8809.
Well, let me tell you, I've hunted many, many times with Blake, and you talk about a great, great hunt. I don't think I've been on a bad one at all. I tell you, one of the most memorable blue wing teal hunts I've ever been on did involve you, though, Blake, and you're going to remember this. We were hunting down around Jonesville there. We were hunting on a slough, and we got out there that morning, and the mud was such that you couldn't wade out to get your bird. And I had left Ella back at the lodge because I thought Blake was going to bring his dog Tiny. He'd left Tiny because he'd assumed since we were filming, I was 100% going to bring Ella. And so we got out there, and we didn't have a dog. And we had maybe, gosh, I guess we had 12 guys. And we had blue wings all over us. So Blake, being the guide and being the professional that he is, Rocky, he said, okay, look, I'll go get Tiny. You know, just keep up with the birds, get what you can pick up. And by the time Blake got back, all 11 of us had limited out. And so Blake was the only guy that hadn't fired a shot. So you asked him about shooting, Rocky. I can tell you he's an expert because you remember this, Blake? We sat you on a stool hidden on a little point out front, and everybody else went back to the bank and just sat back, relaxing, drinking water or a Coke. It was hot that morning. And Blake killed his four teal in four shots.
Yep.
I mean,
wow.
I got there that morning. You guys had all the fun, and you said, well, look, now the camera's on you all by yourself. You stuck down on that chair. I said, Jay Paul, you put me on the spot. You said, hey, look, it's TV, man. Don't worry about it. You know, you missed a few shots. I was just blessed that morning with a good eye, but and the shots.
No, man, you can shoot, brother. I've seen it on canvas backs. I've seen it on teal, man. We all were waiting to. We were ready to heckle him on television and give him a hard time. And not only did he kill four with four shots, everything hit the water, stone dead that morning. So that was a pretty cool memory. It all happened because we forgot our dog. Who'd have thought two dog guys, you know, show up and didn't bring a dog along with them?
It was a good day. We enjoyed ourselves. I think you hunted 3 days straight with us on that trip, and we were blessed with a lot of birds at that time, and it was a wonderful trip.
Oh yeah, it was. It was great,
That's the first time we met old Mississippi, old Richard Stafford. You brought him down with you that day, and he ended up hunting with us for the next 2 or 3 years. Wonderful fella. We sure do miss him, don't we?
You know, man, Richard Stafford probably had more of an impact on all of us than any one individual that I can think of. It seems like every life, and I know because we are powered by Duck South, and you know, loads of our guys on the MS Ducks forum are Mississippi guys and are deer hunters as well as duck hunters. These guys all know who he was, but if you don't, you need to try to find a Bubba Buck video out there. I mean, Mississippi that day, not only was it a great hunt, but did he give us hell about both of us guys being dog guys and not showing up with a dog or what? I mean, that was his personality too. If he found a place where he could really dig at you, you know, that was a great thing about old Sippy. He was gonna get it. Now, you know, how stupid is that? Two dog guys out here and you don't even bring a dog.
Yes, he did. He gave us a very hard time about that. And, you know, he always had a big old saying. He said, you know, you just can't fix stupid. And as I was driving off, driving off and to go get my dog, he just looked at me, shook his head, wearing that big old camouflage sack suit he'd wear. And he just looked at me and the dog and said, you cannot fix stupid, son. And I, you know, you don't understand, Jay, that was the first day I ever met that fella.
I know, man. You didn't have to know him but about 3 seconds, and you know, you felt like you'd been around him all your life because he got comfortable in a hurry. But he sure got a kick out of us not having any dogs that day. Golly, Bill.
Hey guys, speaking of dogs, I've got a Duck South user question on dog training, and the user wants to know, both of you guys are dog guys, what do you recommend to get a, if you wanted to start from right now until duck season came, what should they do to get their dog conditioned and ready to go for duck season?
Well, I tell you, I got a whole lot of thoughts on that, but before I start, I want to invite Blake to come in here because I know that he has been preparing. Not because we've talked about it, just because I know Blake and I know all those guys down there take their dogs really serious. I bet you he's been preparing for at least 4, maybe 6 or 8 weeks. Am I right, Blake? And if I am, what have you been doing?
Yeah, Jay Paul, we started right after the 4th of July. I take them out in the morning and the evening, doing a little whistle work with them, and mostly conditioning work. I mean, the whistles just to let them, remind them that, you know, they need to be able to listen to us and be obedient. But the main thing to do is take them out a couple times a day when it's a little cooler and get some conditioning done. You know, get them moving. Cut back on the chow maybe a little bit and lose a few pounds. But the worst thing you can do is take a dog out in September seal season or dove season and they hadn't been doing anything for 3 or 4 months. So that condition to me is the main thing to do. And a couple times a day seems to work for us.
Yes, sir. See, I knew you'd been doing it for a while. I'll tell you, Blake, we've talked a lot over the last several weeks about mistakes that people make. And, you know, I've advised everybody, hey, if your dog's never hunted before, don't take it on a dove hunt for its first hunt. And I think another huge mistake that people make, and it's a great question by our listener there, is just, you know, going out hunting with their dog, particularly if it's a trained dog. It's amazing to me. You see guys that have dogs that are hunting retriever champions, master level dogs. And they just go out, you know, opening day, and they haven't done anything to prepare their dog. So to answer the question, here is my advice. Blake just said they started right after the 4th of July. That was 2 months ago, 8 or 10 weeks in advance. I recommend a minimum of 4 to 6 weeks before season. Start working with your dog and do exactly what Blake said. Start slow. If your dog's just been in the kennel or on the couch since the end of last season, you want to go out in the beginning, just, you know, throw in some marks for your dog, you know, 10, 12, 15 minutes at the very, very most. Let dog get in some retrieves. If the dog starts to look winded or fatigued, that's your cue in the beginning for that first week or two, you know, break right there. Get the dog in the water a lot. Let the dog have some good long swims. And remember, just because the dog's in the water, they're not always necessarily going to be cool. I mean, today it's in the mid-90s here in West Tennessee with heat indexes over 100. And I guarantee you the surface temperature on most ponds right now is very, very warm. So even with the water work, do it in the morning, do it in the evening. Give that surface water temper time to cool. Number two, when you do start working into more advanced training, go back to the basics. If your dog runs blinds, hey, go out and do some handling drills with your dog, some walking baseball. You mentioned the single T and the double T a while ago. T drills are a great thing to review. Don't stay on those. I believe that there's a lot of negative that comes out of that if you keep on, because particularly with the trained dog, they can get kind of stale at that. But a refresher is a great thing. I will take a handling dog out, and the first week or two, if we've got one back to get it ready for season, I'm just throwing some simple marks, letting the dog adjust back into it. I'm trying to take some weight off of the dog if I need to. Then go out, review your foundation yard work, handling drills, T drills, in the field, start with simple blind retrieves and gradually move into more difficult stuff. And I say all the time, you know, most people with their dog, they don't plan to fail, but they fail to plan. So for the guy that sent us that question, you know, at least 6 weeks out, make a plan, make it a gradual reintroduction. And, you know, if you're preparing to run a marathon, you don't go out and run 26 miles. You start slowly and build into it, and you need to do the exact same thing with your dog. So great question, and I hope that helps.
This portion of the broadcast is brought to you by trainingwithjpaul.com. J-Paul has a website that will help you train your own dog. He will walk you step by step. He has videos. He has written content. He has tons of stuff for you to look at and learn from to help train your dog at home. One of the most important parts of trainingwithjpaul.com is askjpaul.com. You can ask J-Paul any question, no matter what level your dog is at. You can go to askjpaul.com, type in the question, and I'm sure within 24 to 48 hours, J-Paul will have a reply for you and probably send it back in a video in an answer format. So remember, trainingwithjpaul.com.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that plug there. And I do enjoy getting questions from all of our listeners out there. So, yeah, man, remember, if you've got a dog question, you don't have to wait for us to address it on the podcast. You can always go to askjpaul.com. I generally try every Sunday, I make sure that I've cleared everything from the previous week, but I try to get to it within 24 to 48 hours. Thanks for bringing that out there, Rocky. Well, Blake, before we end here, we always try to let everybody have their final thought. But first, our fat boy in residence, Houston Kennedy, couldn't be with us today. So I'm going to ask you Houston's stock question, because you're always cooking. That's a great thing about guys like you down there in the South. What is your favorite snack or food to have in your blind bag? If I take a look at it in the duck blind and look in there for something to eat, what am I going to find?
Favorite, I very seldom ever go without it, is either some beef or venison jerky.
There you go. So, and then you got to have a bottle of water because it's going to be salty.
Oh, absolutely. You always have water. I mean, water doesn't count. They just, you put that in your pocket before you walk out of the house in the morning. But before you get in the blind, make sure you got a little bag of jerky. It'll and it just works out. It kills the appetite, and it works out good. It keeps you going till lunch.
Fantastic, man. Well, listen, as our guest here, I'm going to give you the first shot here. Any final thoughts or comments about anything that you want to talk about before we let you go?
No, I just encourage anybody who has an opportunity to bring someone who doesn't have the same opportunities that we have hunting. We need to make sure there's a lot of folks out there, a lot of young people, and even older, even folks up, you know, adults that have never been exposed to hunting that would really like to go. In conversation, make some offers to folks, and especially get those young people out. It's the future of our sport. It's not only that, but it's just the right thing to do to get people outdoors. They may decide that they don't ever want to hunt again, but what it'll do is get them in the outdoors, and they'll see what nature's about, and they'll start to understand an ecosystem that they never even knew existed. And those are the kinds of people that we need, whether they're working at a desk in New York City. They need to be thinking about nature and making sure we preserve the blessings that we've been given.
Amen. Great comment there. All right, the illustrious one, Rocky LaFleur.
Yeah, I'll leave you with a crazy final thought, alluding back to what we were talking about earlier. If you befriend somebody on Facebook, let that relationship build for a couple of days before sending them a fan page request, okay? That's my final thought for the day. Don't think you're going to get a new fan just because they befriended you on Facebook. I mean, wait a couple of days at least before trying that move.
Rocky, I tell you what, I bet you were one of those I don't kiss on the first date people. I'm going to have to ask Roy Ann about that, man. All right, so we've learned a lot about blue wingtail hunting here. We talked dogs a little bit. We've talked SEC football. Blake, I'm sorry that you didn't get to get in on that. I know you're a big LSU Tiger fan.
I still can't talk about Saturday yet, Jay Paul. I can't get past it. So we're just going to leave it there. It takes me usually a week to get to where I even visit about such an abominable performance as that. But who knows?
Blake, thank you for – I wanted to say one more thing. Thank you for joining us, Blake. I mean, you gave some helpful tips on blue wingtail hunting. Thank you for sharing those.
Well, thank you all for inviting me. It's always I appreciate the opportunity. And, Jay Paul, thanks again. And I hope to see y'all one day down in our part of the woods.
Hey, brother, I intend to get down there as quick as I can. I'm going to come and hunt with you. We want to have you on again soon because there are a couple things that in my closing here that I wanted to get to today that we just don't have time to get to. But number one, a lot of people are gearing up to go to Canada. You've got, I know, an operation. You chase those birds from Arburg, Manitoba, all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico there in your home state of Louisiana. I want to get you back on to talk about that and to talk a little bit about cooking because Blake Swallow has to be one of the best cooks that I've ever been around in my life. So, man, enjoyed having you. Rocky, it's been great, and appreciate all you guys tuning in to this edition of the Advantage Multi on the X Podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.